You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A new book looking into the role of the Sovereign, Governor-General and Crown in New Zealand has been published. This Realm of New Zealand is a comprehensive account of how the Queen, Governor-General and the Crown interact with our democratically elected leaders under New Zealand's unwritten constitution. The authors also examine some of the key issues to be considered about New Zealand should it become a republic. Earlier, I spoke to the book's co-author, Professor Janet McLean, and I began by asking how New Zealand became part of the monarchy.
This all goes back to how Britain colonised. So by extending the Queen or the monarch's sovereignty over different parts of the British Empire, and it's of course highly contestable, the Treaty of Waitangi comes into that and how you read it. But according to the British colonial law, which of course served the British Empire, that's how the Queen, via the Treaty of Waitangi and via other parts of law which allowed you to proclaim sovereignty over certain territories or to claim sovereignty through settlement of your subjects. Through all three of those devices, the Queen claimed that she had sovereignty over New Zealand.
And how much power did that entail initially?
Well, not that much. I mean, if you think about the numbers of British people who were here versus the numbers of Māori who were just running their own show and governing themselves, initially that didn't actually mean much. And there is a ongoing question about whether that sovereignty that was claimed by the Queen, Victoria in those days, was really claimed against British settlers only and not over Māori themselves.
When did this relationship begin to change and the ruling monarch became less influential?
Okay, so that was very, very gradual. So we've said that, you know, when New Zealand was first founded by European or British settlers, it probably didn't make that much difference immediately because Māori were governing themselves. Then there was an intermediate period where the government of the natives, as they called them then, was governed by the British government in London and not by the settler governments in Wellington when they first formed Parliament. So it wasn't initially trusted to the settlers who they thought would want to grab the land to govern Māori. So there was a gradual move to the settler governments governing everything. And it didn't actually complete itself, and this is kind of amazing and alarming, until 1986 and the Constitution Act. I mean, completely. I mean, there was the legal rules and then there was how politics actually happened, but the legal rules weren't really completely giving autonomy till 1986.
And what is the monarchy's role today in New Zealand governmental systems, etc.?
Okay, so now we have our sovereign is the Queen in Right of New Zealand. So that's a separate office from the Queen in Right of Britain and Australia and Canada. So we have our own specific officer, and that person is advised by New Zealand ministers. So when the Queen does something, she's acting on the advice of our politicians who we've elected.
Right.
And a lot of that work is done by the Governor-General, who is well chosen by the government here, and the Queen makes that appointment on advice. So mostly that role is a ceremonial one and a symbolic one. But sometimes it does a bit of work, and that's what our book's trying to work out. When is it purely symbolic? And that might be quite a big role, actually, sometimes, you know, representing the non-partisan part of New Zealand, right? It's not about politics. We're New Zealand. We're not the government of the day. We're representing New Zealand's community and its state forever. Sometimes the Queen is the repository of sort of blame, right? You blame the Crown. How often do we say, oh, the Crown did something wrong or the Crown breached the treaty? So sometimes it's not always the personal sovereign, but it's this idea of continuity over time of wrongdoing of different governments and so on. And, you know, then there's other sort of very technical legal things, but the Queen grants fee simple in land. So the way that our whole system is set up is that a lot of things are done in the Queen's name, even though that really means some public servant or some elected official is doing it. So sort of unravelling the symbolism from when it really might count is important. Now, the most important role is often played by the Governor-General, and it's in government formation. When you don't know who's government, and perhaps even, and this hasn't happened yet, not recently, if a government fails between elections, and then there's a question of who should run the government and when you might call an election or when you might dissolve Parliament. And so there are formal powers in the Governor-General and the Queen in those circumstances.
Now, where does the Treaty of Waitangi fit within New Zealand's constitutional arrangements?
How long have you got? I thought this was only a 10-minute interview. So, speaking for myself, I think it's central. It's the beginning. Of course, if you're writing a book about the Queen and people are thinking of a republic, there's a question of what would happen to that sacred pact and who would succeed to the settler states' obligations there, or if you were writing a constitution anew. So, you know, I just can't, you know, what is the role of the Treaty of Waitangi? Well, it's right throughout our law. The courts pay attention to it now and they interpret statutes. They take it into account when they're requiring the governments, when they make decisions, they've got to take account of the Treaty of Waitangi and so on. So, yeah, I mean, that's a big question. Yeah. That would take a lot of answering.
So, moving forward, what would have to happen in order for New Zealand to potentially become a republic?
There's a couple of things there, aren't there? First is, how would we decide? We talk a bit in the book about the sorts of things that might be required and whether there'd have to be a referendum of the electorate, and even whether there might be a requirement that Māori were asked separately, right, as signatories to the treaty, whether there might be a requirement of their separate consent. And so there's a question of how, but there's also a question of what you're going to change to. And this is where the Australians tried and failed, because it wasn't clear what the proposal was for a new... People divided on what they wanted to replace the monarchy with. And the big division seems to be around whether people want an elected head of state, which would completely change that office, or might change that office, make it partisan, remove the neutrality and so on, or whether they basically want to carry on with a kind of symbolic, neutral person who stands between the citizen and the government institutions and has this more neutral role. And so I think we'd have to, if we were going to change, we'd have to have clear options about what we're going to change to. And then I think we say in the book, we'd have to have everything ready and changed to go at the point where people decided finally that they wanted to choose that option.
Do you think New Zealand is ever likely to become a republic?
I come and go on this. Sometimes I think it's inevitable.
Right.
That, you know, I teach in Auckland. Not many people even have British ancestry in my class anymore. So, you know, those ties to home and all that, that seems like my grandparents' generation or my parents' generation. On the other hand, I think we have to think seriously about what we'd want to change it to, and I'm not sure that we've quite clear about that yet. And I also get a very strong sense of people being anti-change for its own sake and think, no, just keep it. We don't notice it. If we don't notice it, just...
So you think it's something that will come through perhaps a conversation?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the generation of your listeners are the ones who are going to decide that. it, actually.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.